Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. Through COVID, recording out of my daughter Andy's bedroom and with the technical skills of John Milkey from Blast Podcast. Since we typically tape these segments now via Skype or Zoom, my guests are actually able to see me and vice versa, which means they get to actually see my daughter's bedroom, a room which I would have dreamt of having when I was a young girl. With the endless twinkle lights and the amazing decor and pictures of friends sprawled everywhere, it's truly Instagram worthy. And that in itself is an issue. Why would it matter? Why should anyone care? Welcome to Raising Children in a New Social Media World. Add in our current world pandemic and parenting has new layers being added every day. Young adults are being forced to make decisions they hadn't yet expected, and we as parents and educators are all trying just not to screw up. At least I know I am. Right now, we are having difficult conversations, cancellations of plans and opportunities, online schooling, endless screen time, limited social interaction, and worse, sexting, the challenges of healthy eating, daily movement, and the list goes on. And for any of you past these growing pains, you may recognize how maybe, had they been handled a little differently or discussed differently when you were a kid, you might actually have maybe ended up a little different. Joining us today is Lindsay Seely, an educator, consultant, mentor, and facilitator. She is the author of Growing Strong Girls and Rooted, Resilient, and Ready. And she's also the CEO and founder of Bold New Girls and Brave New Boys, a unique teaching and coaching company merging academic and social as well as emotional support and emphasizing empowerment. She considers herself a difference maker, a social activist who's intentional about promoting local and global social change. So Lindsay, joining us today from Vancouver. Great to finally see you, Lindsay. I can't believe we're finally getting this done.
I know. Thank you for having me.
You were supposed to actually be here right after March break. We had it like mid-March, like right after March break, you were actually supposed to be in Ottawa. We were going to do the podcast. You had a speaking event that you were going to do. It's amazing how quickly life pivots.
What's really funny, not funny, is that March 17th was my official launch date for Rooted, Resilient, and Ready. And that's the exact day that the world went into lockdown. And I thought that was kind of funny, not funny, but yes, lucky me.
Yeah, lucky you. And unfortunately, you know, it was the messaging, like to have a book launch and to have things come out. It's an exciting time. And especially with the subject matter being so fundamental to parents and to kids and to teachers, like it was like, oh gosh.
Yeah. And in a way, maybe now more than ever, we need a book that's teaching our kids and parents to be rooted, to be resilient, and to be ready. So now I'm seeing it in a much more positive light. And this is the way, another way that I'm making a difference.
So let's go through it. What was your background, you know, and why young women? Why was that the focus? I think, especially when you started out, to have such an impact during these years, to be able to create a different, unique individual that could come out of it, hopefully less scathed than those coming in.
Right. So my background was always in education. And right after I graduated with my master's, I went into a private teaching company. And I always worked with both girls and boys. But where I think my heart was being called to focus a little bit more on the girls was from the conversations that I was having with them. So there was so much doubt and uncertainty and, you know, these confident little girls that become really shy, preteen and teen girls that have no idea how awesome they are. There was a complete decline in their confidence and their ability to see their skills. And I thought, wow, this is something that's needed. It's absolutely necessary. And I knew I could help. I knew that I could have very intentional conversations with them about feeling good and about seeing their skills and talents and about growing themselves. And that was huge for me. And I think daily I get to see these changes. And that just keeps motivating me to keep going. It's working.
Well, the thing is, and I find it interesting because I know a lot of my listeners, and to be able to feel like when we were younger and, you know, we didn't have a care and we were strong and carefree and running around, mm-hmm. and not having these kind of, not the status, but things thrown at us. It's like you see a big change from the girls in the playground to being more sensitive. And I even know with my kids, you know, less confident, when you think that the confidence was supposed to be shining because they'd had this upbringing that made them feel so confident. And yet it goes way past even the childhood years, into the teen years, into the young women or young men. Like what happens now really does affect how we are going to enter into adulthood.
100%. And I think the question is always, what does happen? Why are these girls, you know, at 8 or 9 suddenly holding back, taking less risks? I think in large part, just where they are in maturity, they're starting to notice other people. So there's the comparison game. And now we have this added illumination, I think, that's happening on social media. So it's like everything they see is making them think about things more and more quickly, and also doubt themselves more.
When, let's hit on that, because it's something I introduced right off the top, social media. When I think you started into the education program, it wasn't as rampant as it is now.
Oh yeah, sorry, I should date myself here. There was no social media.
Okay, you know, like for a lot of us, right? We are all, even as parents, dealing with our own social media and then our children's social media. So right. How much of the landscape shifted when this became part of their everyday life?
I think similar to COVID, it's upside down. It shifted radically. So not only is it time consuming, so now we're all spending so much time on our social media, it's very, in lots of ways, it's very toxic. We know that images are photoshopped and polished and changed, and we know that everyone's putting forth their very best foot, but it's still going to affect us when we see these images and we're looking at what other people are doing and feeling that FOMO experience. We're missing out. We're not good enough. I think we can say, oh, it won't bother me, but it is. And of course, a little girl doesn't know better, and it's just fun and entertaining, and they're on TikTok and they're playing around, but it's impacting them. It's impacting how they see themselves.
You know, when we were younger, it was Cosmo magazine or 17 mm-hmm. magazine, and that was pretty much all we had to go on. Sure. And it wasn't always just about the looks. There were stories and there were quizzes. There was all this other stuff that we could see ourselves in rather than it just be so image-based. And I think that's, there's no stories now behind what they're seeing.
Yeah, or the story's fabricated, because again, it's the best foot forward. And I just think too that the big shift is volume. So I had Cosmo and I picked it up when I felt like looking in my magazine. Oh, sorry, for me it was 17 magazine. And I wanted either an idea or an inspiration, or yeah, I just wanted to look at images and see what other girls look like. But now it's like in their face all the time. You know, you turn your phone over and there's so much to do. There's so many different sites to scroll through. It's more rampant, I think, it's in their face. And you have to be part of it. If you're not part of it, you're a social outcast. So it's like they have to do it. But I think, again, it's incredibly toxic. But so there's so many images. Like I'd say 3,000 plus images a day is what a young girl is seeing.
3,000
plus. Like, I think that's the low number.
And you know, and a lot of people know my daughters are 12 and 15. And so not only is it started with Instagram, but then it was Musical.ly, and then it went into the TikToks, it went into Pinterest. But what they're also seeing are young people like themselves becoming incredibly famous.
Yes.
Doing right. And it's like they're always questioning, how did that person with their TikToks become famous? Like, how did they do it? And then there's always like, I find that there are comparisons to everything. And it's like, it's not realistic. You know, it's somebody just, they got lucky. You know, how do you explain that to them? Some part of it is just they got lucky.
Yeah. And that is a valid goal, I think, to make it and to rise, like they see, but it's also not, like you said, it's not always realistic. because what they don't see, again, is the hard work that might have gone into it, or that really unique idea, like the one-hit wonder experience, or we don't know anything about these people, but they look like they're making it overnight, and that is not necessarily the reality. But I do hear a lot of girls say, I just want to be famous. Oh, I don't have to go to school. I don't have to look for a job because I'm going to make my job. I'm going to make it on YouTube. Well, maybe, but I always discuss the option B because I don't know if that's likely, right? So, yeah, it's interesting what they see. And again, what they either want to go for it too, or you get the opposite where, oh, she made it. I would never be that good. I won't be able to make it. And that's more the perfectionist style of, you know, if I can't make it 100% or do perfect at it and succeed, I won't even try.
So we're discussing right now some of the issues that we see, but where you're coming from is how to deal with it, how to come at it from a different angle, how to see it in a different light. So what's usually your conversation or the education behind it when you're trying to shift their thinking?
Yeah, so I tend to lean into what's happening for them. So you always want to meet them where they're at and really align with them. So I hear what they're saying. I think it's fun and exciting to talk about being a YouTube sensation or to make it or even to create their own business. Like, that's fine to have that conversation, to listen to their point of view. And it's not an either this or this conversation. It's a what else? Like, let's talk about other options. So in the book, I talk about being a dream booster, not buster. And so if you're a dream booster, you're just going with it. What harm is it to have a conversation about the fact she could become famous? She might become famous. Like, enjoy that till get excited. And, you know, over time, that goal might shift for her. She might realize on her own, it's too much work, it's too hard, it's too unrealistic. But who are we to come in and disrupt that process? So I go with it. And at the same time, I ask the what else. Well, what else could you be? Because many of us are multi-entrepreneurial. We don't just do one thing. I'm multi-passionate. And I like that, you know, not all my passions pay, but I like that I'm many. There are no limits, no limitations. But I think it's about following the conversation. See how far it can go. You just never know. Who are we to say it won't happen?
You just mentioned there are no limits. There are no limitations. And yet right now, I feel like every person is yelling. We are all dealing with these limitations and a shift and a change. So what has been the biggest thing that you've heard from educators, from parents, as to what we are coping with right now with our kids, with the situation? We're dealing with education. You've got people that are doing homeschooling. You have online learning. I mean, what has been the biggest influx of kind of people pulling their hair out through COVID?
Oh, so interesting. Well, I think parents are probably pulling their hair out at providing learning support. They've literally all been forced to be teachers, or in some cases, principals. And I think that's tough, especially if that's not your interest, if that's not where you feel your strengths are. You just don't want to, right? You have other things to do. I think that's been really hard. From the girls themselves, you know, there's sort of this great divide. I think half of them love the new schooling. They love it. Like, it surprised me that they're thinking, actually, I might stay with this. I have more time. I'm more in control. I can be more efficient with my day. Way less stress. Maybe it's about I don't have to get up so early to put on my makeup and pick my outfit and worry about what I look like. A lot of them are saying it's actually better. But the other half, I think, are missing the social part and just really they're bored. They, like we said, there are limits. You can't just go do what you want. I think frustrated, it's really hard right now to make plans, although I'm encouraging them to do it anyways. But I think that it's just now they're getting kind of at that stuck place. What now? Is this it? And how much longer? And no one can answer that. So it's a lot of uncertainty too.
Because you've dealt so much with girls, but I know that with Brave New Boys, you're coming out with all of this material and education for guys as well. Is there a difference between how the girls can motivate themselves and get schoolwork or anything done, and you're seeing a change in how the boys are reacting to the situation? I don't know. I've heard so from friends who have boys, it's like they're on their screens, but it's not so much FaceTiming and texting. It's gaming. It's Fortnite. It's all these different things, and their motivation is different than the girls. Do we see that Is there a difference between the two typically and now?
That's a good question. I don't feel that there is much difference. Not that I'm noticing now. Again, I think a lot of the boys like it probably because now there's unlimited screen time. They're on there. They're gaming. And what's interesting, I think, is maybe just more the difference is the social factor. So girls are missing the in-person connection. They want to feel people. They want to see people. They want to, like, just have real connections. And yes, they like their phones and virtual connections too. But the boys don't seem to be having that same problem because for them, they're virtually connecting and gaming with each other, right? So for them, they feel that that's enough. So I'll say, don't you want to go out with your friends? You can go and see a few people now. No, I'm good. We just game, like we just played whatever, Fortnite or whatever they're into at the moment. So I don't think, and this makes sense to me because developmentally, girls are much more motivated, I think, by the social factor. And guys are just, they seem pretty chill, to be honest. Actually, all the kids do, even though it's a global pandemic. I get it. Like, big picture, it could be causing a lot of stress, but they all seem pretty calm. I think we've removed a lot of the daily stressors.
Well, we've removed the go, go, go. We've removed the get up, go to school, get home from school, get to activities, come home from activities, have a meal or take a shower, got to do homework. I want to just touch on a couple of things that you brought in there because, A, I want to touch on a little bit of how it's going to affect those that have actually younger kids as well. But one of the things that I felt, especially when we're talking the social aspect, is I feel like some kids who hadn't intentionally meant to cocoon themselves are finding that it's the fear or the change and the shift, they're now almost becoming introverts where they hadn't been before. That going back out and becoming social again or reaching out on their phone or FaceTiming rather than texting, what I've been observing is almost they've gone inwards. And that's
a good point.
Something very different that I think a lot of us hadn't anticipated it happening with our friends. They're hiding a bit. Because it's safer or they don't need to go put themselves out there.
Yeah, what's interesting is I have discovered many, many more introverts than I first realized. So I think they were faking extroversion. And now they're telling me things like, I really love this alone time. I really love being in my room all day. My mom is complaining. I'm in my room too much. I'm not even socializing with the family. So it's an interesting, I don't know, slippery slope almost. Like, is it great that they're realizing that about themselves and they're just embracing like, oh, I like quiet time. I think I'm more shy than I realized. Socializing was causing me too much stress. Or has this just become the new normal? And like you said, now it's comfortable. There's no push. There's no encouragement. I think like anything, like all of us are dealing with this re-entry. It's just going to take some time. But at the end of the day, I always ask kids, like, what feels better? Because for me, I'm an introvert. I love alone time. But I also feel pretty good when I'm with people. And so I think it's just going to take that, okay, like, let's take a little step and let's start to go out with one person. Or let's try to join this activity. Or let's consider what's the fall going to look like. We start having those conversations. I don't anticipate a problem with changing back to, or let's say moving forward into being more social. But I think right now it seems like it might be a problem.
That's for me as a parent is the reintegration, which will be slow, but we're now, all 3 months into how we're coping and movement. I know when reading and going through lots of chapters, you talk a lot about healthy eating, the emphasis on understanding how you're nourishing yourself, a lot of it on movement and being active. And there too comes we've been COVID eating. There's a lot of snacking. There's a lot of meals after mealtime. There's a lot of not feeling like going outside. So how do you see us being able to deal with that with a younger child, a preteen, and the teens moving forward?
Yeah, it's funny.
If I can break it down.
Sure. It's almost like all the rules went out the door, especially with food and screen time and bedtime. And now I think we all have to say, okay, let's bring back the rules because we know that they are for good reason. They're to help us stay healthy and feel really good. And I think that it doesn't matter the age. I think we have to slowly reintroduce some of those rules. And maybe it really begins, Leanne, with modeling. Like, I know we've all let a lot go. Like, I'm a pretty routine person, but that, you know, that just got upended for many months. But it's like maybe being that example, like waking up at a reasonable hour, having a to-do list to set up the day, to feel like we're accomplishing, to do some meal planning. And even if we're just finding balance, like healthy and not so healthy foods and hydration and keeping our stress low, like I think all of those have to slowly come back into our inner, to our daily routines, making sure we're getting outside, making sure we're staying fit, making sure we're playing.
Can I be completely honest with you?
Yeah.
I feel like we were like that in the first couple months. We set a schedule. We had the kids out of bed at 10. We had daily activity. We had planned recess. We were eating healthy. And so I almost want to say, I feel the opposite in that we were doing that. And the longer it's gone on, the more that they're now going, what difference is it going to make, right? So while they used to get out and had to be at the dining room table at 10, now it's like 10:15 and I still can't even get them out of the door, out of the bed. And then it's like 11. I find everything is almost going backwards. Like all of those things that we had installed are now kind of going, like, it's like everyone's thrown in the towel.
What if
we've lost the motivation?
I get it. What if we started to flip it and the conversations became not us telling them to get up at whatever time, but to have them be more part of the collaborative process and make more choice? Like, I think it's okay that we're not waking up at 7 if there's no school at 8 o'clock. I get that. But I think, I mean, for me, 10 just sounds late because I'm such an early riser.
Oh my God. But no, we got teenager. Like, this, it's like 11. Funny. And if we didn't come in and wake them up and they'd stay in their rooms all day, right? We're finally getting summer temperatures around here, right? It's summer now.
And maybe some things do have to let go. Like, they're staying up later, they're watching, you know, Netflix, and maybe that one's not worth the argument. But I think just always bringing kids into the conversation and having it be about the choice and empowerment piece. And at the end of the day, again, what feels better? Like, I know if I don't eat so healthy, I don't feel so good and it throws my sleep and my mood is off. And so just explaining some of the consequences, I think, is also helpful in the conversation, but just a little bit like a refresh button. Like, let's like reevaluate this. It's not going to be strict like it is, you know, during like the regular school year, but it's not going to be the COVID way anymore. I think there has to be some negotiation happening.
So where do you see that? I know that self-expression is one of the things that you talk about in the book. Mm-hmm, so where do you see the self-expression being able to be implemented? And at what ages are you listening to them and what they want and how they want to express themselves?
At any age, I'm a big fan of having open conversation, but I tend to come at it from a place of curiosity, not criticism, like just asking questions. Like, I am so fascinated by kids' brains and what is their thinking process? How are they thinking? Are they able to see big picture? Are they just looking at, you know, what's in front of them in the day? But I just ask a lot of questions. What are they thinking about? What are they wanting? How's this feeling? And I'm not saying that we as adults don't have, you know, not final say, but also we're big contributors because we have more life experience. We see bigger picture. But I think that I'm always of the mind that we need to include kids in the conversation, and they need to listen to what we have to say too. And that's how they learn. But it's really ongoing and consistent conversation. And it's all about being curious, really wondering.
Because you say that you spend so much time trying to figure out a child's brain, are there things that you have learned or want to share or things that are in the book that you think are important for us as parents and educators to really just have a baseline knowledge that might surprise us as to how we think they think or learn or react?
Yeah, I think we have to understand that the prefrontal cortex, which is the ability for the brain to make decisions and organize and manage time, it's really just coming, and I think it develops well into our 20s. So when they make quote-unquote stupid decisions, or they act irrationally, or they're impulsive, or, you know, they make a mistake again because they didn't see the consequence, didn't consider the consequence, I think we have to be super patient because that's not them trying to make another mistake or defy us. It's just the natural maturation process. And so we have to, you know, yes, the lessons have to be learned, but I think we have to practice a lot of patience and understanding that. Something very interesting that's happened in the last couple months, I guess, that I didn't really realize is that a lot of, I want to say, just teens that I'm working with are staying up so late. They're binge watching Netflix. And then, like you said, they're sleeping in, right? But I was thinking, why? Like, Netflix to me isn't interesting for 5 hours at a time, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I naturally fall asleep quite early. But I was figuring out why. Like, what are they thinking that would be okay? And that would be, you know, what's happening here? I didn't understand this phenomenon because it was all of them. And I realized they are staying up late because that's when everyone else in the house is sleeping. And that is their coveted quiet time. Because a lot of times they don't want to hear so much talking. So many, you got to do this, or did you do this yet? The whining, the nagging. So they're staying up all night to get that quiet time, that alone time, the solitude time, time for them to think and sort out their own thoughts. And that's causing the, you know, not only binging, but the sleeping in. So I'm just finding this shift in cycle. I'm like, wow, that's what they're thinking. And I felt that was a golden nugget lately. That was the thought.
You've got us one golden nugget, and I'm going to throw another one in, and I'm taking the trust of the audience, because I know I have this wonderful audience that listens, but I'm also at an age where, thankfully, I have really great open communication with my daughter, but who is also very honest. She's honest to a fault. And so I can say, like, who do you have on? And with Snapchat, we were talking Instagram earlier. Snapchat's a whole different beast. Yeah. And I guess she's at an age too, where the boys, and I'm so sorry for mothers who have like 14 to whatever age boys, but like, they're horny, and they're starting with the whole, do you send pictures? And they're starting with the sexting. And it's like, I mean, I've had these honest discussions with Andy about it, but she'll say to me, this boy just asked for something. And she goes, I blocked them or whatever, but this is realistic things that are happening. And you're talking about what's happening late at night. These are things that are coming in off of, you know, their devices and that social media that people might not really be expecting. And these are like really good kids. And I know their moms. And I'm like, you have no idea what your son asked my daughter for last night, you know? And I guess, is it just accepting that that's the way that they have this communication, or that that's fulfilling their needs, especially since they're not seeing each other at school and in the yards and are able to do things?
Yeah, I don't think we should be accepting, but I think that we have to understand that her world on Snapchat and texting becomes more and more private as she gets older. So we can still have conversations, but I think they need to be more about her boundaries, like those personal boundaries that we now don't really have as much say in. So what is she comfortable texting and posting? What does she want to share or not share? So I think these are the kinds of conversations that we need to be having often, so that she is aware. So when a boy asks for something and she doesn't want to, and she feels that pressure, can she set the boundary? Can we even practice that beforehand? Because I think it's a huge problem. And I think girls naturally just want to please. So they're sending things that they are actually not comfortable sending.
So it's having that open dialogue and being grateful for it, that I can have that. But also for those that have the sons who are requesting it. Mm-hmm. And is there, what's the dialogue like on that side?
Yeah, I think it's no different. It's about, maybe for girls, it's about setting the boundaries and keeping the boundaries. But I think it's, with the boys, it's respecting the boundaries. So having conversations, again, preventatively is always ideal. But when you know, not denying that they might send this request, or they might want to let's say, flirt online with girls, can they respect the boundary, that the no or the discomfort? And I think that I don't think those conversations are happening often enough. But, you know, girls request pictures too. Girls, like, I don't want to have just the great divide. Boys are asking and girls have the pressure of yes, yes or no, I'm going to send it to you. I think sometimes it's the opposite too. The girls are making requests and boys are not necessarily comfortable with their requests.
Is this just something that's a natural, the new normal, the new natural puberty progression? I mean, we didn't have it when we were younger,
sexual interest.
Now it is. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just a new platform, right? And I think it's also some peer pressure because it's like anything, if you know all the other guys are doing it, you're much more likely to do it too. Or all the other girls are doing it, you're more likely to start thinking about sending sex messages.
So this is here to stay.
I don't see it going anywhere. Yeah, sorry. I'd love to tell you this is just a phase, but I don't think it is. I think if anything, there's going to just be more platforms.
More platforms, more instant messages that disappear, more ability. I think, Mike, what happens, though, is that it sets in at this age and then it stays with you into the older teens and into young adulthood.
That's true.
And then from there it goes into the Tinder and the easier hookups. And I just don't know if it's becoming so easy and so accessible that we've lost the meaning of it or the intimacy of it or it being special. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And I think maybe the bigger question, Leanne, is just about virtual connection. So it's like, now the boundaries are blurred for me. It used to be I didn't want to do Zoom calls. I always wanted to do in person. But now the Zoom call is feeling like it's almost real. And it's like, oh, wow. But what's actually happening in our bodies? Like, does that actually, release the same amount of dopamine or oxytocin? Does that feel the same? Like, I'm not really sure. I think we're all in this new era of virtual is kind of close enough. But I think that's the bigger conversation is the types of connections. And is this almost like superficial connection, the hookup, is that good enough? Is that what we really want? Is that making us feel happy and healthy and whole and satisfied? I'm not sure.
And I look at how some of these things happen. I mean, we're shifting, we're changing the way we're socializing. We're either becoming more introverted or we might be becoming extroverted in different ways on mm-hmm. social media. And all of this leads to how we're handling, how our mental health is. And I know there's mm-hmm. so much dialogue and discussion amongst adults, and mm-hmm. yet our children are dealing with so many of the same things, if not even more so, because they're not as educated or understanding of everything that's happening. So how are we seeing or how do we protect their own mental health?
Well, I think mental health is, it can really be gauged with the conversations that we're trying to have. And just, I ask really openly, what are you thinking? Or is there anything that you're afraid of or worried about? And so often they have such a, either extreme thinking, like it's really black and white, like everything is bad or everything is good, or there's just so much area of gray where their interpretations are skewed negatively. Like the brain is naturally negative. It's always going to look for the criticism or the fear, or the worry, because it needs to protect itself. And that's just what our brain does. It's evolutionary. But I think in the conversations, I hear how they're interpreting. I hear their perception, and then you can play around with it. So a good example is when I run into a lot with girls is they might send a text message and they don't hear back from someone. And then that girl will assume, the black and white thinker is, she's mad at me or I did something. And again, I bring in the question of what else could it mean? There's so many interpretations with that one experience. It's not all bad. It could mean that she's busy or she's taking time to text back or she just didn't see it. She just didn't look at her phone. Lots of times their phones die. But I think that mental health is all about the quality of thoughts, but knowing where your brain goes so negative or so extreme is super helpful. And then we just work on the reframing. So reframing that negative thought or that entrenched thought that's maybe even self-deprecating and asking the what else and trying to come up with a more positive thought. So I think with what's happening in with COVID, I think a lot of the students I worked with saw only the bad in it, right? It's a loss. It's devastating. They're not allowed to do anything. But then the conversation started to shift about, you know, I think they started to feel a little bit different, and we could see some of the silver linings, we were calling them. Well, what's good about this time? Because there's always that balance, and they were able to start to see it differently. Their conversation changed, their mood changed. I think a lot of reframing.
Even more so, or not more so, but what would you say for those that are not quite yet of full self-expression, you know, a little bit of the younger kids, like what are their biggest fears right now? You know, as preteens and teens, we're able to have that dialogue, but there are a lot of parents out there who are dealing with younger kids who might be showing different signs of fear or anxiety coming out in tantrums, in blowouts. Mm-hmm. Like, how is it being expressed?
Yeah, so either they will express it, like you said, with the tantrums, the blowouts, or they'll go into the shutdown response, unfortunately. So then you don't get much of anything. You just think, oh, they're being quiet or they're keeping to themselves. But I think with the little kids, what we have to know is they feel our anxiety and stress. So again, it's all about finding our own calm, trying to be as positive as we can, because they consume it without even realizing that that's what's happening. And it's affecting them, I think, deeper than we know. And for those that can't express, I think I'm a big believer in play and like creative expression. So getting them to draw, getting them to, you know, play with dolls, they might be able to like to almost talk out what's happening with themselves through the toys, right? Just getting outside, moving their bodies, checking in simpler ways. Like, how are you feeling? I have a feelings poster and I just get them to pick, you know, is it happy or frustrated? And we have really good conversations about what all the different feelings mean and validating them all. They're all normal and healthy and good. And talking about the fact that feeling frustrated is how they're feeling in the moment. It doesn't last forever though. You talk about it, you work through it, you jump on the trampoline, play with the dog, get it out, right? And that's processing their feelings in the way that they can.
There's also parents that are exhausted and tired and educators that, you know, have been trying to teach and, you know, having parents emails and I don't know how to do this. And can you explain it? Like, people are tired. Can we, are there ways around sometimes going, okay, point to the calendar and let me know how you're feeling? Like how do we, in our own frustration, anxiety, exhaustion, cope with it so that we're not coming across like it's insignificant, we don't care, but we're having our own sometimes daily battles also.
Yeah. I've been hearing a lot about, what's it called? Compassion fatigue or care fatigue. So we're caring for everyone else. We're trying to hold it all together. And you're right. We're tired. It's getting a little bit harder. I think first and foremost, we want to make sure we're able as we can to take care of ourselves. We all need help. Like no parent is supposed to be doing it all. It's not the time to wear the cape and be superwoman or superman. But I think that we need to get help in the way that feels good to us or is realistic for us. So we're getting support. I think lots of times just that reprieve, right? Having someone come over and take care of the kids or having something that they can do outside semi-independently so we can have a little me time. I think that's more important now than ever before. But I think you're right. Sometimes we don't want to have these conversations. They're tiring too. And I think that we undervalue presence. Just being there,
yes.
Just being, you know, watching a movie and just being there. They feel that. And there's been actually quite a few shifts from my perspective with the increase in family time and closeness. And that's building a lot more positive mental health and security and good feelings. And sometimes it's okay not to talk. You don't always have to talk. So just being there, just, you know, side by side, working on something, doing a puzzle, eating in silence, that's okay. They feel that when we can be there in like mind, body, and spirit, and we can just be like in the moment and have that mindfulness, that's more than enough.
Sometimes I think we appreciate that. And I know a lot of families, the devices go away, family time. And sometimes it's just being present and being that's in right. that moment. For you, if I can take you back to the books, because I want to be able to hit on that and why you did it. What was the most important factor in starting with one book and then moving to the next? What did you want to accomplish? And what were you hoping? Was it for parents, for educators? Was it for the young girls to read? Who did you see this as your audience?
Oh my gosh, that's such a great question. Okay, I'll do the first book, okay. Growing Strong Girls. I think I was on a personal mission or passion, I guess, to really figure out what it means to be strong. So personally, I didn't feel so strong. You know, on paper, I might look like an accomplished person, but I still didn't feel it. There's such a disconnect. And I kept thinking about it. And I had a counselor and a therapist, and I was having conversations. And I thought, you know what? Maybe it comes down to practice. So like anything, it's a skill. Like, what if I practice being strong every single day? Take a risk, take a chance, do something new. And yeah, it's uncomfortable and scary, but I started to actually practice it. And I started to feel better, and I started to feel more confident. And it's like something in my brain just switched. It's like, that's it. You practice. You need to grow into strong. You need to work at it. And then, of course, everything I do, this is professional hazard, I guess, it becomes, oh, now I can help. I can help the parents and educators and counselors is really who the book was for, so that they can then grow a strong girl. But I have had many girls read the book and said they gained a lot from it too. But it just became about exploring strong in a variety of conversations and activities. And I just wanted to make it super practical. So, okay.
So can you give us some examples? Like, what was it for your own journey that you went from feeling weaker to practicing becoming stronger?
A great example for me was just using my voice. Whether I was saying, you know, that hurts my feelings, I don't feel good, or, you know what, I need some alone time, or I need some help, or for me, I need a discount. I ask all the time, could I get 10% off? They start to negotiate, but it was using my voice, because so much of my childhood, I was just silent. I was so good and so trying to be perfect. I didn't have a voice at all. So just really speaking up and encouraging girls to do the same. I want to hear their feelings. I want to hear their opinions. I want to hear when they don't agree with me, when they're uncomfortable, when they're sad, everything. It was really about voice and how powerful that can be.
A lot of them, though, have that voice. They, as parents, we think like we've raised strong girls. So how do we go through, and as you mentioned it right at the top of the podcast, the transition from making sure as they're moving from kid to young adult, that they don't lose that, that we build on the you're strong, you're capable, you're confident, that we don't lose that, because that's right there is like the trickiest of times, I feel.
Yeah, I think the biggest one I notice with voice as they grow, and they tend to withdraw and hold back and become much more uncertain, less confident, is in the social circles. So they might have a voice and say, no, I don't want to do that, or I don't agree, or actually, I like this instead. And when they experience a shutdown or someone saying, we don't care, or if you don't do this activity, then you're going to have to find new friends. Then it becomes about survival. And girls will almost always choose survival, fitting into a group with their compromised voice and feelings and opinions, than to stand and say, no, actually, I don't agree, or I'm going to go do something else. It's incredibly hard for them because of that social pressure. So it's a tough conversation when I have to say to girls, you know, who matters more, you or these friends? And so the alternative is being alone. But I'm trying to help girls see that that is better. Because when you're alone and you have, you know, you stay true to you, you're going to actually naturally attract people who want to be part of that. But I think it's incredible pressure. And, you know, it's easier to just fit in. It's easier not to work through a fight or conflict. But it's not necessarily better. And that's where girls, they lose their confidence.
One of the things statistically that we see more so with girls than we do with boys is the body image. And so mm-hmm. I'm thinking now with kids at home, we're able to monitor a little bit more what they're eating, what they're mm-hmm. taking in, how much they're burning of it off. But mm-hmm. when you talk about fitting in, a lot of that comes down to body image in girls and weight issues or eating disorders. This is something that I know you talk about also in the book. How mm-hmm. important was it for you to face that and bring that into the reality, because it's so much a part of that aspect of growing up?
I think it's huge, because I think it's so interconnected with how they feel about themselves and then the kinds of relationships that they build. And so I think for me, it was always something to focus on, but I don't think it was the real thing, right? So it was about digging a little bit deeper that, yeah, we want to take care of our bodies and we want to feel good and look good. And we're, you know, constantly finding that balance. But I think deeper than that, it felt like it was more about like my self-esteem. Like, how do I really feel about myself? And is there, I think in the book, I say like beyond body, beyond appearance, like what else? Because if you have balance and you have all these other things to focus on, other interests and things that make you happy, it's not all about your body, but it's like, as you become less happy, it becomes more about your body. So I think with girls, the conversations that we can have are, yes, I call it the three F's in the book, like focus on food, fueling your body, fitness, and fun. Like, it doesn't have to be all serious, and life isn't supposed to be as stressful as we make it, but it's the what else, like what else makes you happy? What is making you sparkle? And I think then girls are a little bit less, I want to say, body haters, body shamers, because there's so much more going on. And this probably goes back to the screen, right? So the less time they're on their screen, the less they're seeing unhealthy body images or unhealthy standards, I'll say unrealistic standards of beauty. I think the more happier they are. So at the end of the day, it comes down to that happiness.
How do you then do the motivation part? We were talking, a lot of kids have lost their, even if it's down to what they're passionate about. So much, I think, of what you try to do is find something that they're passionate about, find something that they can like indulge in or, mm-hmm. you know, put their focus on. And a lot of those activities have been taken away. I mean, mm-hmm. granted, if you're playing the piano or the violin, I mean, you're still practicing just as much at home, maybe not even more. But mm-hmm. kids who are active and in sports and used to, you know, having the social action of teammates and the physical outlet, and they've lost that. What should you be doing to help retain that or keep them motivated?
Yeah, it's really hard. We're trying to keep that too, right? How do you know, yeah. life is feeling kind of boring and same old. I think the shift in the season is going to help. So from spring to summer, there's always a little bit more to do outside for sure, a different energy. And I know we have the fall kind of pending. So it's like, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we know it's going to be different. And sometimes fall can bring good energy too. But in terms of self-motivation, I know I work with a lot of girls that were competitive in swimming and all their sports. And now that's gone. So I think it goes back to your earlier point. What's the point? If we're not competing, and that was so exciting and exhilarating, then what? And I think we're going to have to dig really deep here, because I see we're hitting this challenge, and I think it then becomes about personal goals. So you might not have people to compete with, or you might have less to do now, but I think we need to bring it back to, what else can you do? Can we find some new passions or adventures? But maybe focusing on, how do you set your own personal goals, like your own, like being competitive with yourself. And I've been having more conversations lately with kids about bigger picture. So can we flash forward to next summer, where you want to be competitive still? So you're going to have to work pretty hard this summer to prepare for that. So they're not necessarily focused just on this summer, but it's that longer range view. You still want to grow your body and your skills and your competitive edge, let's say.
There are people that, like, say, young adults who mm-hmm. might have been going from high school into university, where sports is part of it. Sports is, for many people, a big part of their identity. So, mm-hmm. you know, they were the football player, they were the soccer player, that, you know, that there's mm-hmm. an identity associated with it. So with that being taken away, mm-hmm. you know, there's new shifts. Like, these things might not be coming back right away. Like, I find it so hard.
Yeah.
That they lose a sense of self.
But it's not, I mean, they might not be able to play, you know, be the football star player on a team, but I think they can still play football, or they could still go to the gym. They can still work out. Like, I think we're all having to adapt to new and creative ways. But I would say, to then say, oh, I'm not an athlete at all, that's actually not accurate. Like, so you're right. And maybe this is a conversation and over-identifying with any one part of ourselves. But I think we can try to shift to, it's an opportunity to learn another sport or modify the sport or see it differently or see yourself beyond your athletic self, because there could be an artistic self inside or a more social self than they knew. But I think that we're not being stopped from developing. We're having to shift to new ways to develop and grow.
So on that point, mm-hmm. how would you suggest parents, educators accept that they might lose a certain sense of identity with one thing and be able to push or inspire them to think outside the box, maybe?
Yeah.
And not just for kids. I think it's just for, this applies to everybody, yeah. I think, at this point.
Yeah. And I think maybe the emphasis being on not you're losing an identity, it's you're also gaining this opportunity to cultivate new identities. And, you know, it's not a bad lesson for us. Like, we do hyper-focus on certain parts of ourselves. And now we have this chance to, I call it the expanded self. So it's like, well, what else can I do? Where else can I grow? What am I going to learn? How can I use this time as a chance to become? Because as the world shifts, I think we are starting to see new possibilities that I never would have considered. I just started a shop online and I wouldn't have considered that because I didn't have time to create it. And now it's been such a source of joy. It's like, oh, this is a new part of my business, a new part of myself. But I think we're learning that we actually are expanding, and that's a really positive movement. So back to your question about parents, I think it's asking those questions, like the what else or what's next, or let's expand who you are and try to maybe spend some time exploring. I do a lot of work with kids, and we just start with literally a mind map, which is a brainstorm on a page. And we write down. A mind map is a visual organizer. So you would literally have one piece of page, grab some colors, you put an idea in the middle. In this example, it could be my expanded self or the new me or whoever it is, 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. And you write down all the ideas that come to mind that might be worth exploring. So if football was your sport, maybe write down some other sports. And then you go around and you start thinking about, okay, well, if you were to pick up basketball, or maybe it's not a sport at all, let's say you want to learn an instrument, let's write down all the instruments that are real possibilities. So it's being able to see it. And I think there's such a powerful, it's so powerful to see ideas. So often we don't necessarily process all words, but when we're seeing it on a page, I think it creates a heck of a lot of excitement, enthusiasm, positive energy. Like, oh yeah, I'm losing this, or I can't do this. And that's a disappointing. And we have to have a conversation about those feelings. But look what else. Like, look, like, how excited can someone get about something new? And the answers vary. But it goes from conversation to the power of the tool and then to actually do it, to buy the supplies or to find the coach or the tutor or whatever it is. It becomes this this project, if you will. And I think there's a lot of energy and momentum that can be created from that.
I love that. And I think, honestly, that answer really applies to every single one of us right now
who is having to shift,
you know, anything that's been going on. I'm looking through, as we were talking, chapters of the book, right? And so there's so much in there between the rooted, the resilient, and the ready. And there's a lot of different topics in there. And, you know, where for you is the most, is there one that's like most important? It's like you have appearances, you have healthy minds, you have a girl in her phone, you have pressure from peers. So there's a whole thing in there about friendships and bully, like there's tons. Let's talk about sex. You know, and I know that in part of a lot of the bios that I read on you, social impact, social change is a big part too.
Yeah.
For all of us.
Also, to go back to your question about where did the inspiration come for book two, I think it was really natural. Like, these little girls are now getting older. They need to be even stronger, even more confident. And so I came up with Rooted, Resilient, and Ready. But it also just came out of all these conversations I was having with the girls and parents. And just, I knew I had another book in me. So it's like I felt this, let's say, social responsibility to keep going with the girls as they grew. But I think I just can't help myself. Like, the more I learn, it's like, oh, wow, this is good stuff. This sounds like a book to me. And it just became that passion to keep writing, to keep at it, to keep helping. You're asking me to pick? Oh my gosh.
No, well, I know, because it does, right? You go from the growing strong girls, you're right. And yeah, it was almost like a progression into, right, you know, getting them ready for adulthood. You go through everything. Yeah.
I'm not going to say this is my favorite, because I do like them all for different reasons, but I do feel maybe most proud of chapter 8, which is on the future, because I hadn't read a lot about talking about or taking action steps for the future, for getting girls ready. And the girls I was talking to were more scared about the future, not excited. So I think I was just really happy to contribute something that I hadn't read a lot about. I didn't find there's a lot of research on the future. And just to, I guess, that idea of just launching in such a positive way. I wanted it to become, let's get excited about the future, not panic stricken. Let's pump these girls up and do what we can to prepare them. And I thought that was the ready part. And right, I was really happy with that.
I got to say that's pretty scary and frightening that you found that more of them were not excited about the possibilities, but there, it was more fear-based.
Like 99%. You know, like
that's striking. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
So it was a stat or was a realization from discussions that surprised you most?
Just both. And I thought, oh, was I that scared? Like, has the world shifted that much?
Is it expectations that they're scared of not meeting up to the standard that people, does it come down to fear of not meeting expectations?
Yeah, there's actually a lot if I can unpack it. So it was the fear of disappointing people like family and friends. I won't be good enough. You're right. It was their own disappointment. Like, what if I don't meet my own standards? So the pressure for themselves to achieve and accomplish. I think they're seeing a lot of women on the rise right now. So the order is tall. I think there's a pressure there. And I think for a lot of them, it was, I don't know what I want to do. Like, I have no idea. And, oh, I want to keep my lifestyle because it's pretty good here with mom and dad. And they were actually genuinely worried about money, not being able to make enough to keep up with their life. So I think there was a lot to it.
Is it fair to say that our kids are much more spoiled than they might have been 3 decades ago?
100%.
Right? They've got their phone. Like,
they have a lot.
And there's a lot there that we didn't have. And we had to go play at the park until the lights come on and then you come home. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think they definitely have a life of abundance. Not all of them, of course, but I think a lot of them. And I think it's great. They have a lot and they're at an advantage in lots of ways. But I think it's not great if it becomes entitlement. Like, of course I have this. And it's like, sometimes I worry about their hustle. So I was so motivated to work, to make money, because I didn't have a lot. And it was so exciting. And I think, oh, if you have everything from the start, how do you get motivated to to hustle? So it's interesting times.
I have really good friends who are, you know, who could provide everything that their kids ever could possibly want. And they're very in tune with the fact that they don't want that opportunity for their kids, because it's almost like a, then what? What do they have to look forward to? If they have That's a fancy right. car now, then what? What do they strive for? You That's know, right. and it's almost like having to put our own limitations on them to allow our children to look forward to earning things themselves or experiencing things themselves. You know, it was like, why would our children travel first class? You know, we can, but why aren't we giving them something to strive for that they can build it and earn that themselves? You know, like we fall into that trap to how much do we provide and how much do we allow them to earn for themselves and experience it from their own value and hard work.
I love that they have that awareness though, right?
Oh, this family's amazing. Yeah.
Maybe sometimes they won't hit it. And it's hard. Like, if you have a lot, you want to give a lot. Like, I would want to provide everything for my kids, but the downside is that too much too soon, they might become, this is just the way things are. And I don't know. I just, all I can think about is the joy that I felt with the hustle, the working hard, the having a goal. You know, I worked all summer picking berries so I could buy new clothes for school. And that was exciting.
Okay. So let me say that right now, Lindsay, because usually, so, and let's just like hit on this for the last point, is usually the summer would be about summer experiences, having freedom, being able to get out and enjoy summer, have summer jobs, have summer romances. All of those things have been taken away for a lot of kids. There's no summer jobs. There's no social interaction. So how do we allow them to experience something and find joy in a time that's going to be very difficult? And I'll kind of wrap it up with that, because that's where we are. That's where we sit right now.
All I keep thinking about is one word, and that's different. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's just different. So, okay, maybe they can't get the summer job that they wanted, but there is work available. I have a lot of these super entrepreneurial students or creative students, and they're saying, okay, my job at the restaurant, well, that didn't happen. But you know, the grocery stores, they're hiring more people because they need to accommodate for increased shopping and purchases. So they've just seen it as a change. It's just different. Not what I expected, but still a job. I'm still working. So maybe kids can't go to the beach and play with or hang out with all of their friends, but they could still go to the beach and maybe hang out with two friends. Like, I think we're just having to see it as different and accommodate, but it's not all of it has been taken away. It's just change. It's just different. So getting them, I think, now to start seeing it as such, like, well, it's still positive. Let's just make those accommodations. Let's be flexible. It's like cognitive flexibility. They have to change what they thought in their mind. But once they start to do it, they start to open up to healthier thoughts, bigger thoughts, more expansive thoughts. They get more used to it. And I think that that's a healthy place for them to be. Life doesn't go as planned. How many times have we had a plan and it doesn't work? So we have to shift. But it might be even better. We don't know.
Well, this will be something we're going to look back on a couple years from now. I can't wait for all of the studies 20 years from now. The post-COVID studies on how the world shifted and the new normal. So the two books that we have right now, Growing Strong Girls, Practical Tools to Cultivate Connection in the Preteen Years. And then the second book, which followed that, was Rooted, Resilient, and Ready, Empowering Teen Girls as They Grow. You have The Bold New Girls, Brave New Boys. And so I know a lot of this, you know, we were talking girls and stuff, but it's really the same life lessons. It's so similar when it comes really to the boys. The dialogue, the discussions, the wording, it's the same.
It's true.
People can find you, because I know you were speaking and talking. Is it you finding more outreach right now from the educators, the school systems, the parents? Like, where do you see for you now the next couple of months going?
I think it's really a little bit of everyone. I think right now, not so much from schools as they're sorting out what the fall looks like. Definitely an increase in hearing from parents, especially for summer support. Like, do we keep learning or do we give them a break? I mean, they've had a break, so I think they're just wondering what to do and maybe for some additional tools. I'm always a believer to keep learning going, because I see learning as lifelong. So maybe you're not learning, you know, grade 9 math, but you can still be learning. Like, I see it as being an eternal learner. There's no stop and start for me. Do they need a break? I think we need breaks and time to play, but I think we can also find balance and be learning and growing and reading and growing our brains continuously.
So it doesn't necessarily need to be an online, you know, a summer school, but maybe a course or something or something different that is just keeping the learning process going.
Yeah, maybe it's an opportunity to think outside of the school box. So just follow their interests. But I think that, yeah, keep learning going. It's learning for life.
Really interesting. Okay, so Lindsay, I'm so glad we were able to connect. I will put all of the links so that people can find both of the books that are ready to go, and they can learn more about the Bold New Girls and the programs that you have. But really interesting. And so I appreciate this. As I'm sitting in my daughter's bedroom and I can see all of her, you know, her makeup and her pictures, I'm I'm going, I think we're doing okay. I just, you know, it's understanding that it's just different. And maybe it's looking back years from now, it might not have actually been that bad. There's some true blessings that are coming out of this time. I really appreciate your time, Lindsay. And for those that are listening, this is another wrap on Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. Appreciate it as always. Love that you are liking and sharing and letting people know about the podcast. It's wonderful to be able to see it grow. And even, you know, we've got guests coming from different continents. We got oceans and across our country. Lindsay joining us today from Vancouver. Lindsay, thanks again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Leanne.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. Or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.